We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this is Dirk Nowitzki, and you listen to the Mavs Step Back Podcast.
Let me step back for a minute, tired of the gimmicks. See, we just focused on winning. Ball in the airline center, we about to get litty. Luka carrying a torch, Borden jumped up on the porch. How you reckon with his force? Third season in the game, and he a legend by his fourth. Look, after Dirk, now the king of Dallas. Airline serving as the palace. Young team, and it's full of talent. Want revenge, we accept the challenge. Luka carrying a legacy. What it take to be an MVP? Being great, know it cost a fee. Know it really ain't that hard to see. Hold on, wait, silence the critics, cause they never did it. Pass Al Jordan, I ain't woke up the city. Map shooting hot like we straight out the chimney. Go back to Batman, I'm calling them Drizzy. More triple doubles, I'm waiting on 50. Step back smoother, you know it's so filthy. If I get down on my team, gonna lift me. Rep the map, step back, overcame the setbacks. Starting where we left at, know we gotta get back. Know we gotta get back. Rep the map, step back, overcame the setbacks. Starting where we left at, know we gotta get back. Like, know we gotta get back. Let me step back for a minute. Let me step back for a minute. Let me step back for a minute. Let me step back for a minute.
All right, our guy Kevin says biggest adjustment is start Mavrelo Bolovic over KP.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to need you to get the hell out of here.
Hey, but did you? He said to start him over KP. I mean,
that's a good idea.
Hey, what's the harm there? You know, why not? Let's try it.
Yeah, no, he's right. He's right.
Oh man, KP. I tell you what, if KP doesn't come out angry, and we've seen how he plays angry at times, you know, at different spots over the course of the season, like how he came out and played after those Golden State Warrior trade rumors, you know, he plays better when he plays angry. So if he doesn't come out in game four and play angry, it's just not going to happen. Which I don't have a lot of confidence that it's going to happen anyway at this point. I'm just saying, like, if it doesn't, after that in game three, you know, it's just not going to happen. So
right.
I don't have a lot of hope for it. I'm just saying, like, this is likely the last opportunity he has because, you know, if the Mavs, if they don't win, I'm still confident, Matt. I mean, if they come out and win game three, I mean, game four and go up 3-1, I think they're definitely winning this series. But if the Clippers come back out and win the same way they did in game three, then, the Mavs might be in trouble. So, but anyway, all right, we got everything set up here. We're going to officially get started. If anybody has anything they want to add, just send us a speaker request. We'll let you in here, and, we'll just talk for – We'll probably talk for about 30 minutes or so. So if you have anything you want to say, just come on up. How's it going, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Mavs Step Back Live. I'm your host, Dalton Trigg. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and DallasBasketball.com colleague, Matt Galatson. The Mavs, they weren't able to take a insurmountable 3-0 lead over the Clippers in the first round of this NBA playoffs. In Game 3, they lost to the Clippers 118-108. It's kind of shocking how from the end of the first quarter, well, I'm going to say like the end of the first quarter through the rest of the game, the Clippers outscored the Mavs by 30 points, or a little over 30 points for the rest of that game, and only won by 10. And that's because the Mavs went up by nearly 20. They were up 30-11 out of the gates, and the energy was electric. There were 17,000 MFFL strong in the building. It was just, you know, it was an unreal scene to see. Even for me, you know, I wasn't there in person, but just watching it, you know, on ESPN, it just looked like it was absolutely electric. Perfect atmosphere for playoff basketball. And the Mavs, they came out and, you know, looked like they were ready to put their foot on their necks and end this thing. And, you know, they took Luka out when they had the big lead, and you had a couple of heat check shots, which I understand because they were so hot. I mean, I probably would have too. But after about the fourth heat check, you're just kind of like, okay, maybe we need to pull back a little bit and, you know, start running some sets or something, because a couple of those really bad heat check shots that they missed, that's what allowed the Clippers to start chipping away at that lead. And then by the time the end of the first quarter came, they were only up 3 instead of nearly 20. So they kind of, I don't know if they ran out of gas. I just think it was a matter of Luka was just so nuclear. Once he took that first break, the Clippers, they left Paul George and Kawhi Leonard in there, and that's when they started going to work. So it was unfortunate, but the Mavs, you know, they still played relatively well, especially offensively, and they just weren't able to, you know, they weren't able to beat a really good team 3 games in a row. Because, I mean, look, the Mavs dominated the first 2 games, but, you know, the Clippers are really good. Kawhi Leonard, he's an all-time great. Paul George, he's really good too. I don't know if I'd call him an all-time great. I guess he could be eventually, but no. He's got to have more playoff success than what he has. But, you know, those are 2 really good players. They have really good team that shot over 40%, the best 3-point shooting team in the NBA in the regular season. And, you know, they hadn't performed up to their standards in the first 2 games. And, you know, Marcus Morris, he finally got it going, unfortunately for the Mavs in Game 3. And, you know, the Mavs just couldn't keep up. They weren't able to, and look, they're a younger team. They don't have nearly as much playoff experience as the Clippers do. So I'm not shocked that they weren't able to hold on to that early lead. It was hard to envision this Mavs team going up 3-0 over the Clippers. The Clippers are just too good. I wasn't very optimistic going into that game. I figured they were going to end up losing it. But, you know, Game 4, that's what we're going to, you know, that's what's really going to tell us how this series is going to go, is whatever they do in Game 4. Because Rick Carlisle, he's one of the best coaches, you know, after a loss as far as making adjustments and everything, and especially in the playoffs. So we'll see how they counter the Clippers, who opted to go small more often than they did in the first 2 games. So we'll see what Rick does in Game 4. But Matt, what's your initial takeaway from that Game 3 loss? What'd you like? What'd you didn't like?
Well, I mean, I think it was unreasonable to expect the Mavs to sweep this series. So one loss, even though it comes at home, which is obviously not ideal. You want to, if you're going to take a loss, you want it to be on the road. But, you know, to me, they were never going to sweep this series. So one loss isn't the end of the world. They have to rebound tonight. They had an opportunity to really, you know, put their foot down and on the Clippers throw in this series last night, and they got off to the big lead, and then, you know, we all saw what happened, but it doesn't mean the series is over. It doesn't mean the Clippers are coming back. It's just, you know, it happens. It's the NBA playoffs. The Clippers were going to hit back. Now it's just a matter of whether the Mavs can take that hit and bounce back and come back with their own haymaker. And I think they will. It took a lot for the Clippers, a lot of energy for the Clippers to come back from that lead. And if Luka keeps playing like he did last night and like he has the first two games of the series, then, you know, I don't think the Clippers can survive, you know, to seven games with Luka playing like that. That's just my opinion. But, you know, that Rick will make some adjustments. That's why you have Rick Carlisle, because of stuff like this. This is where he thrives, in the playoffs, making adjustments. And, you know, I think he will. I think they'll come out on Sunday, and I think they're going to win.
Well, I mean, look, there's a reason why only I think it's three or four teams that have ever come back from a 0-2 deficit in the playoffs. You know, teams that go down 0-2 have like a 6% chance of coming back. I mean, once you go down 0-2, you have to win four of the next five games to win that series. So, you know, there's a reason why that hasn't happened as often as it has. And when you have a player like Luka, who's a transcendent star, and he's shown you he's gonna bring it every single night. I saw a stat that it said that Luka has now scored 300 points through his first nine playoff games. The only other two players to score more, I think, no, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Michael Jordan.
That's pretty good company, I guess.
That's pretty good company for Luka. He finished game three with 44 points on very efficient shooting, nine rebounds, nine assists. I mean, you know what you're going to get from him on a nightly basis. What you don't know what you're going to get on a nightly basis is from his perceived co-star, Kristaps Porzingis, because, I mean, man, we've said it before, and like some people get really mad at us, especially our European friends when we post it on YouTube. But, you know, when we criticize KP, we get some heat for it from a certain section of our listeners. And it's not that we're not rooting for the guy. Like, of course we're rooting for KP. We want the Mavs to be the best version of themselves. And, you know, that would include KP not going for 9 points in 34 minutes and going 3 of 10 for the field and grabbing like two rebounds, you know. that's not us. We're not rooting for that. We're rooting for the guy to succeed. I don't know, man. I don't know. He's got to show us a little bit more pride. You can't go. He cannot go into game four and have another game like he did in game three. Or he might. You know, we've talked about how this series might define whether the Mavs, whether he's on the Mavs roster at the start of next season or not. But man, if he keeps playing like how he did last night, he might not be tradable. That's how bad it was.
That's a fair point.
You know, and you know, at the very beginning, they were up 17-6 in game three, and Luka and KP were coming up the court, and Luka swung it over to KP on the right corner of the three, and he nailed it. He nailed it in transition. It was in rhythm, and it was one of those moments where you thought, okay, maybe he's going to get going now, but it just never happened. And then Luka made the comment after, and I don't know if he said this just to kind of like make KP feel better or something, but he was just like, yeah, we should try to post him up more. And like, no, absolutely not. Because then he gets stripped by Rondo or Reggie Jackson on the post because he can't sense the double team coming. So, you know, the solution for me, in my opinion, going from game three to game four would be to do more pick and roll action with Luka and KP, because they were one of the best duos, whether it was a pick and roll or pick and pop, all season long in the regular season by the numbers. So they need to do more of that. And I'm not talking about those little wimpy slip screens that KP likes to do where he's not actually setting a screen. He needs to like actually get into a guy, set a screen, and either roll or pop, and I think good things will happen. And I hope Rick, like, hammers that home to them before game four because, you know, they just can't. The Mavs aren't going to win this series. They're going to be part of that. They're going to make the Clippers part of that 6% that comes back from 0-2 if they don't get more from KP. And I said it on Twitter last night. I don't care if you think it's KP's fault or if you think it's Luka's fault. It's not. Or if you think it's Rick Carlisle's fault. But, you know, the bottom line is that you have to get more from KP. No matter whose fault it is, you have to get more from him. That's the bottom line. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, 14-9 isn't going to cut it. And but the thing about these pick and rolls that you're talking about, are we sure KP's not going to break if he tries to actually set a screen on someone? That he's not just going to shatter into a million pieces?
Look, not to bring up – I mean, it's like Rocky. It's like Rocky movie. If he dies, he dies. Like, it's the play – I don't want to sound insensitive, but, I mean, look, the reason you risk KP – on back-to-backs throughout the entire regular season and, you know, rest him for weeks at a time because of little, you know, sorenesses and everything is for the playoffs. So if he breaks in the playoffs, then, I mean, what are you doing all that for anyway?
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Put him in there and tell him to play aggressive, and if he does break, then, I mean, that sucks. I mean, that's very unfortunate for the Mavs, but this is what you rest him for. So I don't get it, man. I mean, he still has some time to prove me right, but so far I was very wrong in my assessment of, you know, why he wasn't playing as well defensively this year as he was last year. I thought it was more of a mental thing that he didn't, you know, he was kind of scared of getting hurt and didn't want to miss the postseason and that he would, you know, turn it on in the postseason, but that has not been the case. He still can't move laterally. And I kind of fear that last knee injury, you know, did more for his mobility going forward or lack of mobility going forward than what we initially thought. So that's what worries me. Like I said, he could still prove me wrong, but he just doesn't look like he can physically move that way defensively.
Well, it's either that or he's still scared or he's lazy. It's one of those three things, and I kind of lean towards the first of the three options. I just he's declined his mobility has declined substantially since he was in New York, and I, you know, that's no secret, everybody can see it. But I thought that it was a meniscus, right? That's what it was.
Yeah, he tore
it. Okay, yeah. I didn't think that a meniscus would affect him this much, but he just hasn't been the same player this year that he was last year at any point, really. I mean, there's been like one or two games where he's popped off or whatever, but for the most part, this entire season, he's been a major disappointment, which, you know, which is why I'm team shoot KP into the sun at this point. Like, this might be a hot take. I don't really care. Flame me in the comments or on YouTube or whatever after I say it. I don't care. After last night, I'm fine with benching him. Like, I really am. Like, I just don't even care anymore. I'm so over it. Like, this whole, at least for game four, I don't know what to do, but it's 14 points and 9 rebounds from a guy with a max contract in the playoffs is just not acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's my take, and I'm about to bring our guy Jose up here. He has a speaker request. But here's my take on that, Matt. In game four, I would still start him. But you can tell, you know, you can tell by that first stretch with the starters if he's going to have it or not. You know, just based – not just by his shooting, but, you know, how engaged he is on both ends. You know, if he's at least trying hard on defense. Because he just – I mean, Matt, last night he just looked so lost on defense than he has for most of the series. He had a good game too. I mean, he ended up with like 2 blocks and 3 steals, and you know, that was like a sneaky good game for him in game two. He was 8 of 12 from the field and he had 20 points. But I mean, he's not consistent. His game one and game three performances were just inexcusable for a guy making $30 million a year. I mean, and I mean, look, Devin in the chat here, he says if you bench KP, he'd completely quit.
I don't even care if he quits at this point. Like, but I mean, look,
it's like last night when KP was just they were hunting KP on defense every single time down, and they were getting exactly what they wanted. They were cutting him to death. And then Rick was just like, oh my God, okay, this is enough. And he pulls him and puts Willie Cauley-Stein in, and the Mavs immediately make a run. And that's how it's been, you know, that's how it was in game two as well, you know. It's just a matter of the fact that Willie Cauley-Stein, you know, he can't shoot, but he's a better defender, and he makes the lineup on the court a lot better defensively too, and that's really what you need against the Clippers, especially if KP's not going to give you, you know, what we expect from him on the offensive end. If he's not going to be good offensively, then what – sorry about that. Somebody with a big muffler decided to show off. Okay, anyway. But anyway, you know, if KP's not going to give you elite offense, which is kind of what he's supposed to be, you know, the majority of what he's supposed to be, then what are we doing?
Yeah, what's the point? Like, what's the point of having him out there if he can't do either thing that you need him to do?
Yeah.
You paid this guy a max contract to score.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, 23 to 25, 27, somewhere in there, points a game, and compliment Luka and give this team another dominant offensive threat, and he can't do it.
Yeah, and before
so what's the point?
And before people, you know, roast me for my KP rant earlier, the "if he dies, he dies" thing. If y'all don't know that that's a reference to Rocky, then I don't know what to tell you. I'm not literally saying, you know,
if he dies.
I don't roast for that. Y'all chill.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
All right, Jose, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. What you got for us?
Well, just to add on to the KP, did you guys see how he landed on either his ankle or knee last night in the last, like, minute or so? He looked like he was limping.
But I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I saw people talking about it on Twitter. So I didn't see it, but, you know, that's potentially something that, you know, he may not even play in game four. We may be talking about this for nothing.
Right. Well, yeah. I'll go ahead.
I mean, that's a good point. I didn't see that happen. But how funny would it be if – or maybe this is the opportunity they need, right? Like, maybe KP doesn't play in game four, and then they just blow the doors off the Clippers.
I can only imagine what that will do to his ego.
Right.
Oh, it would kill him. It would kill his ego. But, I mean, if it happens, you know, it's kind of like in the regular season. When KP, if he's going to move the way he's moving on defense and he's not going to give you elite offense, then they might be better off not playing KP. You know, because the Clippers are, you know, they know that he is the weakest link when they're on offense and they're hunting him. So, you know, there were times in the regular season where KP didn't play and the team looked like, you know, they were still unbeatable. They didn't skip a beat. So, I mean, why not try it? And then if you do win in game four without KP, just rest him the rest of the series. And, you know, if you play Utah in the next round.
Playoffs. Sorry, go ahead.
If you play Utah in the next round, then maybe, you know, maybe you get a better version of KP. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him. It's just, it's not working with this current version of.
I feel like he wants to be number one so bad. And I feel like I've mentioned this to Kirk before, but he wants to be number one, but with Luka, it's just not possible. You can't be number one. Either you're number two or you're number three. And you just got to accept that role, and you just got to be urgent enough and play with some type of balls to keep your spot. Like you're getting paid millions of dollars. You're expected to at least put up 18 points per game. Play like you want that contract.
Yeah, and look, Jose, here's the thing. That's probably – his ego, that's probably true. He probably would love to be a number one option, or he thinks he's a number one option, but or a number two. But here's the thing. He has to be at least a number three or a number two option before he can even think about being a number one option. And it's not going to happen on the Mavs because Luka's an all-time great. He's never going to reach that level. So unless he just accepts, you know, being the second best guy on the team and, you know, can play up to that, because he's not even playing up to that right now. Tim Hardaway Jr. is 100% this team's second best player right now. And that's not me over-exaggerating. That's just the fact of the matter. Tim Hardaway Jr. is the team's second best player, and he's probably going to get a big bag this summer. So,
yeah. And it's kind of scary because, like, it's a matter of how much do the Mavericks want to pay Tim Hardaway to bring in other people as well, because we're already tied to KP, and if he doesn't put up any good games like besides game two, it's going to be hard to trade him. Going to be hard to do anything with KP going forward if he doesn't step up. And it just sucks that Donnie couldn't build a better team or couldn't get better contracts to establish the roster.
Man, I've said this on previous pods, and I mean, there's really no use in me just, you know, dwelling on it because you can't go back and change it now. But that 2019 offseason for the Mavs, it shows up on so many nights where it's like, man, if they would have, you know, had more interest in Bojan Bogdanović. Like, just imagine how a guy like that – because I remember at the time we were hearing that, oh, the Mavs think his price tag is too high. Like, really? Really? $20 million a year for Bojan Bogdanović is too much. But, you know, he's already – I think he had a 44-point game in the playoffs. Or, well, maybe not in the playoffs, but towards the end of the season when they were solidifying that one seed in the West. And he's been super consistent from them, an elite three-point shooter. You know, it makes you question what the Mavs are thinking in their roster building sometimes. And I'm not completely giving up on them. Yeah, most of the time. Well, I'm not completely giving up on them because, like I said, this is the first offseason where it seems like they have more opportunity since that 2019 offseason when Luka was still a rookie. And now everybody sees, like, oh, my gosh, this dude is otherworldly. He's going to be a two-time All-NBA first-teamer. You know, I think people can see at this point, like, okay, if he just has a little bit more help, this is going to be a perennial contender. We're going to have a good shot of winning a title if we play with this guy. So we'll see how it goes this offseason, but I'm still optimistic about it. But, man, that 2019 offseason has really killed the Mavs, not just in some of these regular season games when they just don't have enough, but, you know, in games like Game 3 where Luka desperately needed a little bit more help and he just wasn't able to get it.
Right. I say Game 4 is a must-win. And the reason why I say that is because the Clippers are veterans. You know, they have the experience while the Mavericks don't. So I feel like it's a very much win situation on Sunday.
I agree with that. You know, it's kind of crazy to say that because if the Clippers win, it's a, you know, it becomes a best of three series then. But I agree. This young. And they're really not that young. I mean, but they are younger than the Clippers, and they don't have near as much playoff experience as the Clippers. But, you know, I agree, they have to win Game 4 at home. You can't lose another game in front of a packed crowd in Dallas and, you know, have the series tied going back to L.A. I just I don't know what that would do for their mindset. You know, Luka's going to be fine every single game. I'm supremely confident in him. I just you know, the rest of the guys, I don't know how they would take it. But Matt, what do you think? Must win game for the Mavs in Game 4?
I mean, I think every playoff game is a must win, but in terms of the Mavericks, like, I do have a bad feeling that if they lose this game it could go sideways. But, you know, that said, maybe they're just going to be better on the road in the playoffs than they are at home. I mean, at least initially, there's a million different things that could happen. And that's why I thought it was so important that they finished the Clippers off last night in the first quarter when they were up by, I don't know, what was it? They were up like 15 or 16 or something like that in the first quarter.
Nearly 20. They were up 30 to 11.
Okay, so 19. So, I mean, look, they needed to finish it there. And I almost texted the group or tweeted the group in our Twitter DM and said, oh my God, this series is over. But I didn't do it. And if I had, I feel like it all would have been my fault. But since I didn't do it and they still lost that game, I feel a little bit better about it. But anyway, no, I mean, of course it's a must win. I mean, I hate that they're in this situation because they had an opportunity to finish it. But, you know, they're just going to have to take it on the chin and come out and try and have the same intensity they have. You know, they had the first nine quarters of the series.
Yeah.
They didn't have that in the last three quarters. I mean, it's not like they were pushovers. They weren't, you know, they were getting pushed around or anything like that, but the killer instinct thing that I saw in the first nine quarters of the series wasn't all there. There was still some of it, but it wasn't all there. I just think they need to, you know, to really put their foot down. Otherwise, you know, Kawhi is going to go Kawhi and this thing could get ugly.
Yeah, it's not I have no doubt that, you know, with Luka doing his thing, the Mavs have a chance every single night. Even with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, you know, just going nuclear last night and hardly missing anything, they still only lost by 10, and it was a close game, you know, game. But the thing is, Matt, they've got to do better because the three-point shooting has been consistent for three games. The Mavs, they've been unbelievably good from the three-point line. Last night, they were 20 of 39, so 51% on shooting threes. The problem is they were 38% on their two-point shots, which is just abysmal. So they got to fix it. They got to fix that. I don't know how much of that has to do with Zubac or – you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. thinking he can drive into Kawhi Leonard for a layup. That seems like a bad decision every time. You know, they got to fix some little things to where, you know, when you shoot 51% from three, you still don't have an overall shooting percentage of 44%. And also, you can't get outscored in the paint. You know, 46 to 24. You can't get almost doubled up there too, because that's way too many easy points for the Clippers. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, Zubac getting second chance points, and, you know, Paul George or whoever driving past Dorian Finney-Smith, who definitely didn't have his best game of these playoffs last night. So I don't know. It's a combination of a lot of things. I think those are the two biggest factors for last night, though, the two-point percentage and the points in the paint. And we'll see how they do in game four. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith, he's due for a bounce-back game. Like I said, KP, I don't know, man. I'm not confident with KP, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. We've seen times where people have just piled on him, and he gets angry, and he'll come out and have, like, one good game. That's all I'm asking for from KP. Just come out and play angry and have one really, really good game. like a 30-point, 17-rebound, 3 or 4 block game. Like, come out playing like you're playing against the Indiana Pacers for once, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But, Matt, you have anything else to add before we take off here?
Yeah, I mean, J.J. Barea attends a game and the Mavs lose. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Oh, man.
I'm joking.
Oh, below the belt for J.J.
I love J.J. I'm sorry.
Well, Dirk was in attendance, and, you know, there were a bunch of Dallas Cowboys in attendance. There's a lot of star power in the arena last night, and it didn't matter. But I think it was just more of an inexperienced playoff team learning how to close a series, because it was going to, going into it, you knew it was going to be extremely hard for the Mavs to go up 3-0 on a team of the Clippers talent level. I mean, that would have just been amazing. And Rick Carlisle warned them before the game. He said, look, you know, the energy is going to be electric, but it's a long game. It's a national TV game. There's longer timeouts. You know, even if you start off good, you got to keep it up because the game's longer. And sure enough, I mean, that 20-point lead didn't last hardly any time. And the Clippers got back into it. But I like the way the Mavs, you know, continued to fight after giving up that lead and still made it a game until, you know, the last few minutes of it. So I'm confident that they'll come out and play hard in game four. And like I said, Rick Carlisle is one of the best in the business when it comes to game-to-game adjustments. And I really think he'll do something to counteract the Clippers' small ball lineups that just absolutely killed the Mavs. You know, even if you have to – I mean, this is crazy to say, and I see our guy Grant's in the chat. So, Grant, if I'm just, like, completely off here, just feel free to roast me on Twitter or in your next analysis piece that you do for DallasBasketball.com. But if the Clippers go small, like really small, and they're just killing the Mavs, I mean, why don't we just put Luka at center and just give Rick Carlisle playing all guards and maybe like Dorian Finney-Smith and just meet their speed and have Luka just go Shaq on them? Why not?
Do a lineup of like Luka, Jalen, Richardson, Tim Hardaway, and Dorian.
You know, whatever it is, I can see something like that working. I mean, and Grant here, he just said in the chat, I definitely think they need to, at the very least, take KP off the floor for sure.
Micro ball, baby. Pull a page out of the Rockets book.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If you're not, if KP is not going to be able to punish those small lineups, then you have to take him off the floor because he's definitely not going to help, you know, defensively in those type of situations. But anyway, there's a lot to talk about, you know, after each one of these games, and we're going to keep coming on here and doing these recap pods. We don't have to wait near as long for the next one because, you know, the Mavs, they play tomorrow night. Instead of having 2 days off, they have just one day, and they'll play on Sunday night in game four at American Airlines Center in what is hopefully going to be another 17,000 fan night at the arena, because that was awesome to see, Matt. Even Paul George after the game, he was like, yeah, it's, you know, even though the fans are totally against you, he said it was awesome to play in this type of environment because most guys haven't been able to experience that for over a year now. So it was good to see. Yeah. All right, guys, that's going to do it for another episode of Mavs Step Back Live. Appreciate y'all coming in and listening. Be sure to go like, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms. And we will see you guys either tomorrow night or sometime Monday. So y'all enjoy y'all's Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you next time.
Let me step back for a minute. Let me step back for a minute. Let me step back for a minute. Let me step back for a minute.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.